right just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were plenty of taxes and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat in the cradle and the stew. I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay, and then he walked away. But his smile never dimmed. He said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy, silver man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. We'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. College just the other day, so much like a man I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you, can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'm feeling like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them free? And the cat in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when. Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the blues. But it's your nice talking to you, Dad. It's been your nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cat.
You are listening to Cats in the Cradle by Harry Chapin. That's a song told in first person that relates the story of a father who was too busy to spend time with his son. Career came before family. The show is Sound Health. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host on BBS Radio. We attempt to bring you a show that will provide guests and information to help promote self-health and those guests that we think fit into our mission here at the Sound Health Research Center in Ohio. Today, Dr. Jan Berman is back. This is her third time with us. And there were so many questions again last time that we couldn't get them all in. We'll be with her in a minute right after one kind of a long announcement. In a few weeks, we're going to have Lindsay Williams on the show. He's the author of The Energy Non-Crisis. He wants to tell viewers about the about healthcare crisis and what people need to do about it, how people can be prepared. Now, I don't want to believe that a crisis of that magnitude is going to happen, that the whole healthcare system is going to go down the tubes. But we're working hard here at Sound Health on several projects that we'd like to share with people. First, one on diet, how to monitor your nutritional needs for a more healthy body, lose weight naturally by knowing what your body needs. So if you're interested in that project, please get in touch with us at Heather, H-E-A-T-H-E-R, at vocalprofiling.com, or just give us a call, 740-698-9119, or just jump on bbsradio.com and look for us. another announcement for the show. And we have a computer program that can help you look at your child's needs in terms of vaccination risk. We've had two kids in this week, and we were asked by their parents to look at their vocal prints to be able to tell if there were any contraindications to the pertussis inoculation. Both kids had severe milk allergies. It showed in their chart, and the parents confirmed that both kids were on a milk-free diet at the point. So if you're interested in helping bring self-health through bioacoustic vocal profiling to your community, get in touch with us. Sign up for our beginner's class to see about starting a bioacoustic practice in your community and see if this kind of alternative health functional medicine is part of your future. You can look on our website at Nutrasounds, N-U-T-R-A, sounds, that's plural, .com, or our research site, J-B-A-B, justicebadappleboy.org. That really stands for the Journal of Bioacoustic Biology. Heather's email again, heather@vocalprofilingink.com, 740-698-9119. Okay, on with the show. Dr. Jen, thanks for taking your time to be with us. I hear you've been out on a book tour. How's that going?
It's going really well. Thank you, and thank you so much for having me on the show again. I always love talking with you.
Well, tell people about your book. For those of you who haven't heard Dr. Jen on our show, she's one of the most popular people we have. We get tons of email about her and her great advice. So, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. How's your book being accepted out there?
It's doing really well. It made the Los Angeles Times bestseller list, and
they're about
doing a second publication of it, which I'm really excited about. So I'm thrilled.
You're a therapist in private practice in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, I'm a marriage, family, and child therapist in Los Angeles, and I also have been writing a parenting column for over 6 years. I'm also a parent myself. I have twin girls. And when I wrote the book, what I really wanted to do was to create the book that I wish had been written for me before I had kids. And what I've done is I've looked at what are the issues that come up over and over again in my private practice, what are the issues that people write to me about at my column, and also when I travel the country doing television and radio, what are the questions that come up over and over again. And what I did was I narrowed it down to one chapter for each letter of the alphabet, and each chapter stands on its own, so the busy parents don't have to read the book cover to cover. They can pick up a chapter that interests them and come back to other chapters later.
You have your own show too, don't you?
Well, I've had my own radio show on Clear Channel and Star 98.7 called On the Couch, and it's a call-in advice show, and right now it's in podcast. I've also hosted some other shows myself as well.
Do you have a website where people can sort of get in touch with
you? I do. It's drjen.com, and that's spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R-J-E-N-N. That's D-O-C-T-O-R-J-E-N-N.com. And I also have a newsletter, and in my newsletter, my monthly parenting column gets printed in that as well.
For those of you who want to ask Dr. Jen a question, we're taking calls at 877-876-5227.
And in the past, when we've gotten questions, I've answered questions from parents on all age spectrums, everything from infants to teenagers and older. So, you know, please feel free to call or write in about really any age topic.
Okay, another number, 888-815-9756. Those are toll-free. And a direct number, 530-876-3222. And Dr. Jen, a lot of our listeners use their phone lines to listen to the show, so we invite them to write us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. radio@vocalprofiling.com. We just kind of veered off in that direction that people write to us rather than calling in.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a caller out there that have a question, by all means, give us a call. You know, last time we had more questions that we'll answer, and I have a few of those to start with.
Sure. That's pretty intense questions.
But of all the things going on, what do people ask you about most?
I would say a question I get asked a lot is, what is the most common mistake that most parents make today? And I would have to say that the answer to that is not having consistent boundaries with your kids. A lot of parents today want to be their kids' friend, which is an admirable goal. We should all have open communication with our kids so that our kids can use us as a resource. If they have questions about anything, we want to be their number one resource. I would much rather my children get information about sex from me than from some kid on the playground who's going to get it wrong. I'd rather my kid get information about anything from me as opposed to another peer. But a lot of parents go to such an extreme where they work so hard to be their kids' friends where either they don't have proper boundaries with their kids, where they reveal too much information that really kids don't want to know about their parents, or they're just not consistent about rules in the house, you know. And a lot of the time it's very easy to do that. For example, let's say you tell your child, don't throw the ball in the house. If you throw the ball in the house, you'll lose the ball for a day. You get home, you've had a long day at work, you're exhausted, you're cooking dinner, your kid throws the ball in the house, it doesn't break anything. So you say, well, you know what, you didn't break anything, you know, next time I'll take it away. But what most parents don't realize is that the message that they send their child is that I don't really mean what I say and you don't have to listen to me, that the rules don't really count for you, and that I don't say what I mean what I say, and that's a bad message to send to kids. We want our kids to take us seriously, and we want, as much as kids kick and scream and complain when we make those boundaries, the truth is kids feel safer when parents make boundaries. I've actually had kids say to me in my private practice, believe it or not, I wish my mom would enforce that rule. You know, I test her to see if she cares, and she doesn't, and so I just do whatever I want.
Do you think any of that is not out of not caring? But a lot of parents have
Absolutely.
Such a bad diet, they don't have the energy to get up and do it.
Sure. Well, there are a million reasons why parents don't have the energy. And also, it's easier to not fight with your kid. It's easier to just be the good guy and be like, oh, don't worry about the ball. But the truth is that our job as parents, and being a parent is the hardest job around, our job as parents is to teach our kids, about life, to teach our kids about how things work, and also to teach kids about the consequences to their actions. You know, as much as we want to save our children from pain, you don't want to help your child avoid dealing with the consequences of their actions, because if you do, they don't learn the lesson.
And you have to look at it like tough love. I'm doing this for their own good.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, and they may not like it and kicking and screaming, but really they'll thank you later.
Absolutely.
Here's a difficult one. I'm a single mom with a 13-year-old son. Any advice on giving of the talk that's in quotes?
Well, I have a lot of advice. My first piece of advice for other parents who are listening, whose children are younger than 13, don't wait till your child is 13. That's my first piece of advice. You want to start creating that dialogue really from infancy. And you do that by when you change your child's diaper, I'm cleaning you off now, I'm cleaning your, and you use the proper word for genitals. And when they're in the shower and they touch themselves, you say, oh, yes, that's your vagina. Yes, that's your penis. And you want to create that kind of open dialogue by start off by using the proper names when your child is little, and also answering questions and letting your child know from an early age, if you ever have any questions, please ask me. Please feel free. I don't want you to ever feel like something's too embarrassing or uncomfortable to ask mom. So for this single mom who waited till her son is 13, first of all, you waited too long. He probably knows a lot more than you think, and he's gotten a lot of information from kids at school. The first thing I want to say is make sure that you don't go into this embarrassed and uncomfortable. Practice with a friend. Practice talking about these things so that you feel more comfortable, because kids sense when we are uncomfortable, and they sense when we have shame around sex. And as a result, then they get uncomfortable and they don't want to talk about it. When you wait so long that your kid is already a teenager by the time you're having this conversation, it tends to be a lot more uncomfortable than when you have open dialogue all along. So I would say practice with a friend. Be prepared. Your son knows more than you think he does. And also do it in as comfortable a way as possible. You know, I would recommend saying something like, hey, you know what? I was thinking about it. We've never talked about sex before, and I bet you have a lot of questions. I would love to answer those questions for you. And he said, oh, no, Mom. Yeah, I don't have any questions. You say, okay, well, then I have some information I'd like to share with you. I want to make sure that you know about these things and that you've gotten the right information. And then you can talk about how babies are made. I mean, believe me, your kid knows already. But more importantly, for a 13-year-old boy, you want to start talking about birth control. You also want to start talking about him being responsible for his sperm as he gets older, about where it goes, that he needs to take responsibility for his body and for where he drops his sperm, and that as he gets older, if you believe in abstinence, you want to tell him about abstinence, and if you believe in premarital sex, you want to talk to him about that and about using protection. So you want to start this conversation as soon as possible.
Here's a question from me. Do you make a big difference between biological sex and emotional sex?
What do you mean by a big difference?
Well, I have seen so many kids in our community pregnant at 13.
Mm-hmm.
And biological sex is an urge, and I understand that, and I really think it's wrong for parents to expect their kids just to set on that urge and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a difference in the emotional
You mean, like, you talk to your kids about the difference between making love and having sex, or do you mean between the difference between having actual intercourse and other sexual activity?
Making love and having sex, I guess.
Absolutely. I think it's a great thing to talk to kids about and to let them know that when two people love each other, that they can have really meaningful, wonderful sex, and that when you're comfortable with someone, that people tend to have better sex when they are with someone they're comfortable with and who they love and who they feel safe with. That's great information. I mean, look, as a parent, and this may surprise a few parents out there, I hope that my kids, when they're older, have a healthy, terrific sex life. I hope that it is comfortable for them and not traumatic. And part of the way you do that is by sharing information and by sharing that kind of stuff and by letting them know. It does tend to be better and safer and more enjoyable when you really care about the person you're with and they care about you.
There's a big thing going on here in our school system of almost forcing the girls to get this papilloma shot, and now it's coming up. They're trying to force the boys, saying they might be carriers, and it's brought out a lot of conversation about sex and activity and what age you start.
And I do think it's important to talk to children about venereal diseases really early on. You know, once they know what the birds and the bees are and they're old enough to talk about birth control, that's part of the conversation in this day and age. It has to be.
Oh, one of the things that have happened here, and I don't know if it's everywhere, I'm kind of shocked by it,
mm-hmm.
but on the cell phones there was a girl, a very young girl, 15, that had taken some shots of herself and a young man having sex,
mm-hmm.
and was passing it around to her cell phone mates. And is this kind of a normal thing?
Unfortunately, more and more kids are taking graphic pictures of themselves and sharing it on the internet, sharing it on their cell phone, sharing it on their MySpace page. And one of the difficulties with teenagers is that they have access to so many people, and so many people have access to the images and the things that they say at such an impulsive age. You know, if you think about when you were a teenager and you were mad at your mom, imagine the things that you would have posted on your MySpace page. And those things never go away. And what most teenagers don't realize is that what you post in public, what you post on the internet, can come back to haunt you. It can prevent you from getting a job when you're older. It can prevent you from all sorts of problems, or create all sorts of problems for you, and teenagers don't realize that. And I always recommend, I wrote one of my parenting columns about blogs, and I recommend that all parents check out your kid's blog, check out your kid's MySpace page, check out their Friendster page, because you want to know what is being posted in public. Is your kid posting your home address? Are they posting their phone number? What kinds of pictures are they posting? It's such important information, and I'm telling you, almost all kids have those kind of pages today. And granted, they are from all different sites. It's not just Friendster and MySpace and all of those. So you really need to find out where theirs are, and you need to monitor it, because it is inviting a pedophile into your home by not looking closely at that, because pedophiles are on these sites looking for our kids.
In having a couple of conversations with some of the young high school students who work for us,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that came up because of this discussion about these papilloma vaccinations
mm-hmm.
is that young men are expecting oral sex if they say, well, mm-hmm. I don't want to get pregnant.
Sure.
That's just part
of
sex.
There's a whole new culture of hooking up now, and there is an expectation from boys that women are going to the girls, that these girls are going to perform oral sex, and that there's also kind of an understanding from the girls, for the most part, or at least they think there's like, oh, this is something that you do to gain popularity, to be looked at as cool. Although some girls, even though they don't say it, oftentimes think, well, the boy may really like me, especially if I really please him, and then he might actually consider me for his girlfriend. And it's unfortunate that the relationship aspect and the emotion has been taken out of this, and it's all the more reason for parents to really be having these kind of conversations with their kids, to let them know about venereal diseases, to let them know about the emotional feelings that come up, especially for girls. Look, sometimes it does come up for boys as well, but especially for girls, because sometimes when girls are sexually involved, they start to develop feelings for boys. They start to feel a connection that isn't necessarily there for the boy.
Well, I think Hello? They're seeing it as an alternative to birth control, an alternative to
mm-hmm.
Getting pregnant.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
But still having
Hello?
Sex. Do we have a caller?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Hello, caller. You have a
Hi.
Question, Dr. Jen?
Yes.
Oh, I was listening to the show. I always listen to it, but I was just, guess some questions I have, and
mm-hmm.
I'm amazed that Sherry's talking about what she's talking about, and I have a 13-year-old boy, and he's with a girl that's 14. They've been together for a year now, and
wow.
For his Christmas gift, he wanted a diamond ring, cost his mom, well, me, $230. Is that like a scare?
Is what a scare?
That they're so close that I have to be worried that they're having the sex?
Well, if they're dating for a year and he's asking you for a diamond ring, if he isn't already doing it, he's probably really close.
I mean, he's really good at saying, Mommy, don't worry about it, but,
well,
I mean,
I would say, Mommy, don't
I
worry
have.
About it, too, if I didn't want to talk about it. But let me go back to something you said for a second before we talk about the sex part. He asked you to buy a $250 diamond ring for his girlfriend, and you did?
Well, it ended up being a birthstone ring. It cost me $230. He took all of his Christmas presents, everything this year, for her to have a ring.
So did he earn any of that $250?
He ended up with not a Christmas gift underneath the
so
tree.
So he kind of traded in the Christmas gifts for money?
He traded in everything at Christmas for her to have what he thought
okay.
she wanted.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that he did something that he didn't just go to you and say, I want a diamond ring for my girlfriend. You said, okay, here's $250, let's get her a ring.
Right.
Okay.
No, he just
that's
traded
important.
All Christmas gifts. He
Great.
Ended up, like I told him, which he's at the age that, you know, he understands Santa Claus and all that.
Sure.
And he traded it all in for her to have a ring, for him to have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
How did he feel? What was his feelings on Christmas morning when the other kids had presents and he had nothing under the tree?
Well, I did a little box with her picture and the receipt of the ring.
That sounds very appropriate.
And I had a
Merry
Christmas.
Like a pretty,
I hope you don't forget it.
It sounds like
you
a pretty,
don't have a Christmas present underneath the tree.
Sounds like a very intense relationship for a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, I think it's too much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm like, I mean, I just took them out yesterday for lunch. And
how often do they see each other?
Oh, they talk on the phone. He gets home at 3:30. They talk on the phone till 9 o'clock. They see each other all weekend. They spend every weekend together, either at my house, usually at her house.
Are they
sleeping at it?
Are they sleeping at the same place?
No.
Yeah.
They're always coming home.
Yeah.
He always comes home around 7:30. They never sleep. Well, he slept two nights over there at their house.
Yeah.
But
well,
it's just,
I mean, here's one of the things that really concerns me about what you're telling me. If he's talking to her from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock and spending all weekend with her, he doesn't have anything else in his life. She is his life. He doesn't have time for his friends. He doesn't have sports. He doesn't have anything else going on.
No, this kid played baseball. He played football. He played basketball.
Is he continuing to do that?
Sports.
So he's continuing to do that?
He does no sports right now.
He does or doesn't?
Doesn't. Since he's met her, he doesn't. No
okay, that's not healthy. You know, this is his first big relationship, and what he is doing and what you're allowing him to do is to totally give up his life for this person. And that is a setup to have a very codependent son who, in his future relationships, makes that girl or in the future that woman everything for him and ends up isolated and losing his friends and losing himself. He's at an age where he's still figuring out who he is and what he's good at and what he wants to be when he's older.
Okay.
I would not let him spend...
Something I would ask, would it be one of his parents? Did we make a bad choice for our son to be that bad? Not bad, but I mean...
Well, I don't think he's bad. I think this is normal and natural.
I don't think he's bad, but I mean, making a choice where he has to have the comfort in somebody, is that meaning he's missing something else?
Well, no, he's not bad. But you as parents didn't step in enough because it's your job to regulate him. It's your job to be the gatekeeper with this relationship that he has.
Jen, I think what she's saying is if he needs this kind of intensity from this girl, did they fail him as parents?
No, he's a 13-year-old boy. He's in love for the first time. It's like an addiction. We all just want to be with that person who makes us feel good. What he wants is 100% normal. There's nothing wrong with him for wanting it, but what is wrong is that nobody is saying, hey, look, we know you're really into her. We know that this is a really important relationship for you. We want to help you continue to have this relationship, but we also want to help you to have a life outside of this relationship, and we need to make some boundaries and some rules.
I guess I could be, if I was honest, his dad hasn't had nothing to do with him for 5 years or divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Is that making him go for this girl? And
look, any 13-year-old boy who falls in love for the first time, whether mom or dad is there or not, is going to want to be with the person who makes them feel good all the time. It's up to parents to be the gatekeepers to slow things down.
He's
not going to like it. He's going to kick and scream. And ideally for the parents who are listening, whose kids are just falling in love for the first time, you want to not let it get this far. You want to, from the beginning, to regulate. I mean, look, I have adults in my practice who I say, you know, you shouldn't be over at your boyfriend's 7 nights a week. You need to spend some time with your girlfriends. You need to go to the gym. You need to go see a movie. You need to have something for yourself.
But what do you do with the kid? I keep telling him that. You don't need to be on the phone with her, you know, from 3:30 until 9 at night.
You give him basically a phone allowance. You can talk to her for an hour a night or, you know, maybe to start out 2 hours a night. And you can see her on the weekend. You can continue to see her on the weekend, but you can't talk to her till your homework is finished, and you can't talk more than 2 hours a night. I think that's more than generous.
You want to go let him live in your house?
What'd you say?
I said you want him live in your house.
Look, I know that it's going to be hellacious for you, and he's going to hate you. But look, it's your job to help him to become a well-developed grown-up. And what you're teaching him by letting him do this right now is that when you meet someone who's wonderful, it's a good idea to give up everything that was once important to you, your friends, your activities, your passions in life, and totally focus on that person and nothing else. Is that the kind of relationship you want to teach him to have?
No, I don't.
Of course not. That's not healthy. That's obsessive.
I don't want to be a grandma early either.
Well, you will be at this rate.
So she needs to limit his phone, limit his contact with the girl, and put up with this screaming for a while.
Yeah, and do it in a loving way. What you want to do is you don't want to say, you're spending too much time with this girl, I'm cutting you off. What you want to say is,
see, that's what I do, and then he gets mad, so then that...
And I don't blame him. What I recommend you doing is saying, I think she's really terrific. I think you have something really special. And I have tremendous respect for your relationship, and you guys are mature beyond your years, if you really think that's the case. And I see how strong your bond is. But it's really important that she is not the only thing in your life that you are passionate about. And I see you spending all this time with her, and I don't see you passionate about anything else in your life. And I realize that as your mom, I have failed you. I've let this go too far.
I think you just said it, that when you said the most impassioned part of your life,
mm-hmm.
I think they need to learn that there's more than just the girlfriend that's
yep.
the passionate part.
And the only way he'll learn is if you teach him.
Yeah, and the kids got to learn there's more impassioned part. They might not know it. Like I try to tell my kids, you might not know it. You're 13.
Mm-hmm.
Later on in life, you're going to realize what your parents meant
yep.
and what they said.
So when you're
grounded, you're this, you're that, you don't realize it until you're older what
sure.
your parents truly meant.
But understand that he has not done anything wrong. But your job is to help him continue to develop self-esteem separate from this girl. And in my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I have a whole chapter on self-esteem and how important it is to develop self-esteem that is separate from who you love, you know, exactly what you accomplish and you know, pleasing other people. And your son really needs to figure out who he is separate from this girl.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a chapter in the book, Dr. Jen, about once you've got yourself into this kind of situation, kind of how to back out of it?
I just gave the advice for that. I mean, I just gave
good.
Very specific instructions on what to do, and you've got to make sure that you deliver this information. It shouldn't be punitive and punishing. You don't want him to feel like, my mom is out to get me. You need to say it in a very respectful way.
That's how I felt as a child. It was out
yes.
to get me,
and you should cop to where you went wrong. You know, you can tell him, I really messed up as your mom. I wasn't doing my job when I let you start talking to her for 6 hours a night and spending the weekends with her, because it's my job to help you to have other things in life that you're passionate about besides this girl. She's terrific, but it's important that you fulfill your responsibilities, that you do your homework, that you continue to do the sports that you once loved so much.
This kid was an A-roll student until he met her.
Yep.
On a roll and everything.
And look, if he is not doing his homework, and I can't imagine he is if he's talking on the phone 6 hours a night,
then
you need to intervene.
That's almost like having a part-time job.
It is. 6 hours, my God.
Oh, it's a Sunday. He got up this morning at 10:30. He's been on the phones every since, and I've had to argue with him, please get off the phone.
Yeah, but it's not please get off the phone. It's you know, from now on, we're going to have some new rules in the house.
You want to pay the phone bill, or you want to go?
I think what Dr. Jen's saying is some strict rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a loving way. You know, I realize that I failed you
by
letting you spend
way.
So much time talking on the phone with your girlfriend that you've forgotten about all the things you used to love. You've forgotten about the sports. You've forgotten about your friends. And it's important that you do those things as well.
Thank you, caller. We're going to go on now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
Bye.
Boy, that is a really difficult situation.
Sure, and it's very much along the lines of what I was talking about when we first started speaking tonight about make consistent rules and boundaries. The kids depend on us. Of course he's going to want to spend every minute with his girlfriend and talking on the phone with her. Why not? It feels good. But it's up to us as parents to make the rules and the boundaries and to be consistent.
You know, this fits into another very long email we got. I'm going to try to sort of summarize it here. My 8-year-old was bugging his sister and wouldn't get out of her room. She's 13.
Mm-hmm.
When I finally intervened and went to her room to see what the problem was and asked him to leave, he said, "And what are you going to do if I don't?"
Mm-hmm.
I was stumped
mm-hmm.
that he would speak to me that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into his room and said, "Until you get out of her room, I'm going to start packing up your toys, and as much as I can pack up in the time it takes you to get here, I'm going to remove from your room. I didn't really know how to answer that. I'm in a dilemma. Is there a better way to handle this?
That actually sounds quite fair to me, I have to say. That sounds really fair. I for an eye. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
You know, as parents, we have to provide a roof over our kids' head. We have to provide food for them to eat, and we have to make sure that they're able to get to school because legally they have to go to school. Aside from that, pretty much everything else is a privilege. You know, maybe it's toilet paper, you know, like their basic needs have to be met. But when it comes to toys and cell phones and computers and gadgets and, you know, jeans, the right kind of jeans and the special clothes, all that kind of stuff, we don't have to provide that. That's a privilege, and that's a privilege that's earned. And when a child doesn't earn that privilege as a parent, you can take that away.
That's pretty hefty, though. An 8-year-old says, and what are you going to do if I don't?
Yeah, but he's testing her. It's not surprising at all. He is testing her, and that's what 8-year-olds do. They're supposed to test us.
And one thing, back to the caller that was just on the phone, that the phone is not a right. It's a privilege and should be earned.
Absolutely.
And 6 hours on the phone, to me, is incredibly excessive.
It's outrageous. And I mean, it really, it's a great example of a parent with good intentions not making good boundaries.
It's not, please get off the phone, but you will get off the phone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And also making consistent rules so that your child is never in the situation where they think that they might be on the phone for 6 hours, and that's cool.
I bet we have 30 questions here.
Wow.
One is, Dr. Jen did not answer the questions about whether or not she recommends the papilloma inoculation. I would be interested in her response.
Well, I have very mixed feelings. You know, on one hand, I think it's a great idea. I think that the human papillomavirus, there's a tremendous link between that and cancer. The number of sexually active people, not just teens, who have it, it's somewhere between, I think it's like 80% and 90% of sexually active people have it, the last statistic that I've read. That said, you also, I don't think that the government has a right to force us to vaccinate our children, to put chemicals in our kids, but I think that it is a smart thing to do as long as you've done your research and your kid is not at a high risk to have some kind of adverse reaction to a vaccination, but I think that it's a very smart thing to do.
Okay.
And just because you do it, it doesn't mean your kid's going to become sexually active.
Okay, there you have it, the person who wrote us in that email. This email I've read, and I'm trying to cut it down. I can't. I'm just going to read it verbatim.
Okay.
My problem is not my children, but how my husband treats our children.
Mm-hmm.
When he is upset with me, or sometimes just for no reason, he is unduly harsh or unfair. I don't know how to explain his irrational, inconsistent behavior to my children.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is hard to explain, so here's an example. We have one TV. The kids and I had all the homework and housework done. It was Sunday afternoon toward evening. We were watching a Lassie movie. My husband came into the house in a rush. He had been gone most of the day at a game. He changed the channel, even though it was obvious that all four of us were watching the movie. I asked him not to do this since we were in the middle of the movie. He said he paid for the TV and he would watch what he wanted. My husband doesn't seem to have a clue as to how to feel what is going on with the kids, and he won't go to any classes. I've tried. She didn't really ask a question, just presented that scenario.
I mean, it sounds like he's quite a tyrant. I feel really bad for it. It sounds like he's used to being in charge and ordering people around and always getting what he wants. It's got to be incredibly difficult to live with someone who is that controlling. But I also think if someone is that controlling and keeps getting away with it, they don't have a lot of reason to change. So, I mean, I have so many questions to ask her. It's very hard to answer that question, especially without more information. You know, it just sounds like a very unfortunate situation.
She might save up and buy another TV.
Yeah, but it's not about the TV. The bigger picture is that this is a very controlling man who doesn't care what anybody thinks, and he thinks because he paid for the TV that it means that he can be inconsiderate and insensitive to his family, and that's unfortunate because what he's then teaching his children is that he doesn't care about their feelings, he doesn't care about their mother's feelings, and that it's okay to be controlling and be a bully.
Should she have said in front of him the TV's not going to go to another channel? Should she have started a fight?
You know, if she did that, it would probably just be a power struggle, but I do think it's a good idea for her, providing there's no domestic violence, providing that she is not in any physical danger and her children are not in any physical danger, to say, hey, it's not okay with me if you change the channel. If you want to watch something else, please wait until we're done watching this movie. You know, at least if he doesn't do it, her kids will see what the proper action is on her end so that they can know for their future.
That's good advice. Do you address that in your book about a tyrant?
Well, I do talk a lot about self-esteem and about relationships and how to have a healthy marriage and how to have a healthy relationship so that your kids can have healthy relationships as well.
Boy, these questions are incredible. Here's my daughter-in-law disciplines her children using a squirt gun. Water in the face from across the room if they don't mind. It's effective, but I think it's damaging. My husband says stay out of it. Tell me something that can help me accept this when I see them squirted in the face.
You should not accept it. That's disgusting. That is a great way to damage her children and treat them like animals. And treating your kids like that, just squirting them in the face, is horrible, and it's a terrible way to raise your children, and the person who wrote in is 100% right, and it's inappropriate, it's abusive, it's mean, and it will do harm to her children's self-esteem, I can guarantee it. It teaches them nothing in those moments, and that is, it's inept parenting, and it's someone who is being a lazy parent, because the right thing to do is to teach your children what the right thing is and explain to them why they need to do the right thing and how it is helpful and how it affects other people. What she's teaching them to do is to be abusive and insensitive, and she's teaching her children to resent her, and I promise you they will end up with problems, and that's absolutely horrible and disgusting behavior.
She signed as Hurting Heart Maggie.
I don't blame her for having a hurting heart. My heart hurts just hearing about that.
Do you think that, is there any steps she can take to talk to her daughter-in-law so that, you know, she doesn't cause more issues?
I hope she will talk to her daughter-in-law, and I hope that she will not talk to her the way I just talked about it, because she'll just get defensive, but to let her know that she is worried about her grandchildren's well-being, and that that she's worried that when her grandchildren get squirted in the face, that it doesn't teach them the lesson that they need to know. It just upsets them and makes them stop the behavior, but that it's creating animosity and resentment between her and her kids.
I would wonder if it made them afraid of water.
You know, it's hard to say whether it would make them afraid of water or not, but I can tell you it will make them resentful towards her, and they will never have good communication, and they will never be feel safe with her or feel like they can talk to her. And that's really a shame. That's so, so sad to me.
Here's another sad one. My older brother took my son to a tattoo parlor, lied, and got my son a tattoo where it shows on his neck. I'm very angry, but I don't know what to do. How would you handle this? Is a big scar worse than a tattoo? I wish she'd have put in there how old this kid is.
So her husband took her son?
Her brother.
Her brother? Well, first of all, I would never allow my brother to ever be alone with my children ever again. And I would let him know that he betrayed my trust. And actually, you know what, legally, she might have recourse, because if the child is under 18, you have to have the parent's permission to give him a tattoo. So I would even look into legally what she could do, because she might be able to sue him for the medical costs to have the tattoo removed. But I would let him know it was a tremendous betrayal, and that what he did was incredibly wrong, and it was hurtful, and it was a violation of her trust.
Boy, that'd be a hard one.
I mean, clearly, her brother doesn't care at all about her feelings, her child's well-being. Doesn't care about anything or anyone.
Here's like three or four questions from one person.
Okay.
I've been a single mom for a while, thinking about getting married. Any advice for how to approach a blended family?
So this is someone who already has someone that they want to get married to?
Yes, from the rest of the questions, yes.
You know, I actually have a whole column on my website all about blended families. If you go to drjen.com, drjenn.com, under print, and then specifically in that subsection, author, it's an older column of mine, but I wrote a whole column all about blended family. Blended families. Some of my recommendations to start off is that the step-parent should not be in charge of disciplining the other person's biological children, that you want to be respectful towards any former spouses or former relationships, the mother or father of the child, that you want to make sure to treat the children equitably. In other words, you don't get a $200 Christmas gift for your kids and then get your stepchildren a $50 gift, that you want to be as equitable as possible. And that you really want to do your best to give them the space to have their feelings about this new relationship, that you can never replace their parent, and to really be respectful of that. You know, a lot of people try to step in and replace the parent, and that's not appropriate.
She should go read the rest of this so we can answer her other questions. I mean, read the rest of it on your drjen.com. How do you deal with an ex-husband who refuses to have any communication with his children? It's my duty to explain his actions. I want to tell the truth and be fair and not alienate.
That's a tough one. I mean, obviously, you can't make someone have contact that doesn't want to have contact. The only thing you can do is explain to them that that it isn't about you and it's not about your former relationship, that it's about that he brought children into the world and that he owes it to them to give them some love and attention. But if he is such a terrible person that he's abandoning his children, which is really just horrific and will damage them forever, then all you can do is explain to your children that you didn't do anything wrong, that because children are what we call egocentric. Children think that everything revolves around them, and that's appropriate and developmental. So they think if mommy and daddy get a divorce, that if only they were a better child, if only they were smarter, prettier, you know, fill in the blank, that mommy and daddy wouldn't have divorced. So when dad has no contact with them, the natural inclination for a child is to think that they did something wrong to warrant that. And it's important that this mother explain to her children, this has nothing to do with you. You know, I don't know all of daddy's problems that cause him to not have contact with you, but I want you to know that you are a wonderful child and that his not having contact with you has nothing to do with you in any way. It has to do with him and his own problems.
Okay, this one goes right along with it. How should I introduce a new guy to my kids? What are the clues? How can I know when my kids are okay about a new guy in my life, our life?
Well, wait until you know that this is a very serious relationship. Don't introduce them early on because you don't want your children to get emotionally attached to someone and then break up. So wait until this seems like someone who you could potentially marry and have in your life forever before you introduce them, and then start off really slowly. When you have kids, you can't rush these things. Start off really just saying, hey, I have someone who's special to me that I'd like for you to meet, and let them meet that person, have a lunch, keep it light, keep it fun, and also make sure that person understands that they are not to try to, you know, don't tell the kids to call you dad, don't be inappropriately parental, don't try to discipline them, but try to keep it light and fun to start out with.
I like the way she's asked the question about the new guy in our life.
Sure.
That's a really nice way to put that.
Yeah, that is.
shows she cares about the whole
yeah.
thing going on. My 8-year-old is really imaginative, telling scary stories to his friends. Should I cut down on his TV time?
How much TV time does he have?
It doesn't say here.
Well, I think having an imaginative kid is fantastic. I think it's wonderful, and I would encourage that, but I don't encourage kids to watch TV, and you and I have talked about this quite a bit in the past, that in my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I talk a lot about the detrimental effects of television on children. What most parents don't realize is that there are very strong links between television viewing and ADHD and ADD and learning disorders, that when your child is sitting in front of the television watching TV, their metabolic rate slows down by 12%. For obese children, it's by 16%. When your child is allowed to eat in front of the TV, which no child should be allowed to do, studies show that children eat 8 times more food because they're not paying attention to their body's cues. And by the way, it's the same thing for adults as well. So I really encourage this mom to limit TV viewing, but not because of anything that her son is doing, but just because it's smart as a parent to limit your kid's TV viewing. Also, in this day and age, so much of what is on television is so inappropriate for kids, and I'm not just talking about reality TV. I'm also talking about news flashes about children being kidnapped, about people being murdered, about all kinds of things that we really don't need our kids to see. I consider limiting TV nightmare prevention, and it's a really important responsibility for parents.
Dr. Jen, our time is up.
Oh,
there are so many wonderful questions.
Well, then I'm just going to have to come back.
We will do that. You're almost a regular anyway.
I would love that. I would really love it. I always enjoy being on your show. You're such a wonderful host, and your listeners are just so fantastic and curious, and I always love answering their questions.
Well, we're going to have you back. Thanks again for taking the time out.
It is my pleasure, and I hope you'll all check out my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids by Jen Berman, 2 N's, J-E-N-N.
I checked this out on Amazon. You have a 5-star rating.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm really, really proud of that. And I hope to get more 5-star ratings. I hope that anyone that's listening that chooses to get the book enjoys it as much as people have so far.
I want to read one of the reviews. This is from Leslie D., and this is on Amazon. I wish I could give you more stars. I have to say this book is so helpful. It's offered incredible insight and honesty that I have been looking for in a parenting book. In fact, I liked it so much I bought extra copies for fellow parents. Now my only hope is for a book to have a sequel.
And I'm working on it.
Well, one of these questions that came in is to ask you to write a book about children's diet.
Well, I do actually, in my book, my first chapter, A is for Apple, is all about children and how to teach them to have a healthy relationship with food. And in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, in addition to the chapter on food, I also have a chapter on helping your children love exercise, because we want healthy kids. That's so important.
Yes, I can see a whole string of books you need to write. We need to get, for any of you out there, please get in touch with us about our classes. We'll train you to use bioacoustic biology to monitor health and wellness in your family, your friends, your clientele. Let us help you set up your own business. Buy Dr. Jen's book. Buy lots of copies. Pass them out to your friends. Join us for our free demo classes. Get in touch with Heather, Heather at vocalprofiling.com. And if you'd like to know more about what we do, visit our website at Nutrasounds.com. Dr. Jen, give out your website address one more time.
My website is drjen.com. That's spelled out drjen.com.
Another wonderful visit. We'll have you back.
I would love it. Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you later.
Learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad, you know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat in the cradle and the school, little boy, little boy.
good time then.
The ball that come on, let's play. Did you see me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And then he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy, silver man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. Just the other day, so much like a man, I just had to say, son of a